Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reid tweeted the other day, just heard the song on the radio, should I stay or should I go? If I stay, there might be trouble, so come on and let me know, stay or go. Stay or go? And then she let us know that she's at her parents' house in Palm Springs. She just heard that song, so she wanted to share it with you and get everyone's thoughts. Good night, everyone. Going to bed.
I do love that song.
It's a really solid song.
It's a great song. Big old Clash fan. Where are her parents at?
Palm Springs, apparently.
Palm Springs. I never know any of these places, so I'm always like, I'm just visiting my parents in Palm Springs. I'm used to visiting people in much worse places.
Oh, come on! Arkansas is the Palm Springs of the South.
Yeah, those ours kind of are. I'll actually defend that. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful country. It's God's country there.
When I saw that show, Monsters and Mysteries in America, and they went to the Ozarks, it looked fantastic. I mean, I'm not even joking. Like, it looked like it would be a cool little, like, area to go, like, scavenging.
You know who was scavenging last night?
Oh, Larry Sanders?
Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders is throwing shots at Brandon Jennings, and we all know how Brandon Jennings loves to take shots. Hey-o! which was great. I mean... Brandon Jennings has, as we talked about yesterday a little bit, he's kind of put all of the onus of his struggles and his shot selection on having to bail out the Bucks for years on offense. And since going to Detroit in the sign-and-trade, you know, he's talked about how, you know, he wants Detroit to be the new Lob City. He wants, you know, he's going to change his game back to his AAU days and he's going to, you know, he's really excited to play with these bigs and guys that can really go get the ball. And Larry Sanders took exception to that.
I don't know whether Brandon said something yesterday at Pistons Media Day because I couldn't find it. I found no record of him actually saying, I'm playing with better bigs now. There have been comments about how, like, oh, now it's going to be great. Like, now I'm playing with better teammates. But I haven't seen anything that actually said they're better bigs. But apparently somebody asked him about Brandon Jennings basically saying, oh, I'm playing with better bigs now, so I'm going to have a great time. And Larry responded with, what was the exact line?
He'd have to pass them the ball first.
He'd have to pass them the ball first.
Which I did a little digging on the old NBA.com stats. And Monte Ellis was the lead assister to Larry Sanders last year with 78. Brandon Jennings was second at 65. So Monte Ellis passed the ball to Larry Sanders, at least in terms of assists, more often than Brandon Jennings did. So maybe Larry's got a point there.
Maybe a little bit of a point there. And then, it's like, to me, this kind of gets back to what we were talking about yesterday, because it's like, oh, he's been playing for the Bucks though. And I'm like, look, they had Ersan Ilyasova and Larry Sanders. I mean, he had some weapons. He had some guys. And it's like, well, those aren't great guys. And I'm like, well, no, but it's not also not Bismack Biyombo and Byron Mullins. Like,
right. I mean, I will say this. Before last year, I probably wouldn't have passed it to Larry Sanders if I'm Brandon Jennings.
Yeah, but I would have passed it to Tobias Harris.
Sure. Well, he'd have to be on the court first. Thanks, Scott Skiles. But no, he did have, I mean, he had J.J. Redick there for part of last season. As much as we joke about Monte Ellis, he can score the ball, right?
Right.
I don't know if you're going to get a lot of assists off that because he's a fan of the dribbling, but you know there were options.
I just love the fact that Sanders went right for the throat.
It's great. I mean, that's kind of the why everyone loves Larry Sanders, and it'll probably get him into trouble throughout his career. But you know, you love those guys that are just like, no, I'm not gonna do the politically correct, like, cliche thing here and just say we're focusing on our team. He's like, no, I'm gonna let Brandon have one.
Yep. Yeah, that it's gonna be. And hey, like, maybe Bucks, that Central division's getting a little testy now.
It is, like, a little testy.
Pacers, Bulls are not gonna like each other because both those teams have a lot of attitude.
I did like that. That Roy Hibbert respects Joakim Noah, but said that he doesn't like him.
Yeah, I like that. It's like, well, I respect him. I love that from Roy because it sounds very much like him. Like,
it does. I mean, even last year, David Lee went down with a hip injury in the playoffs. And he's like, I don't like David Lee, but that sucks. I don't want to see anybody get injured. It's like, yeah. Thank you? I don't know if that's a nice thing to say.
Roy doesn't like many people. It almost makes you think, like, you know, him hanging out with Duncan is really appropriate because he's like Duncan if Duncan talked.
Right.
If Duncan said anything, that's kind of what Roy Hibbert is. Because you'd love to hear that from, like, Duncan, for Duncan to be like, oh, I don't like Andrew Bynum, but...
Yeah, I'm like, why don't you give us your thoughts on Kevin Garnett? All right, let me just break it down for you.
Yeah. Great player. Kind of hope he gets hit by a truck.
Right.
Oh, so, hey, man, media day yesterday. How was your experience?
It was fun. I mean, it was, you know, it was... nothing that revealing happened. It was a lot of... holy crap, Derek Williams lost a lot of weight. And, like, we do the muscle watch joke, and Lang Whitaker's got the muscle watch on NBA.com. But Derek Williams has legitimately lost a lot of weight. He's down to 235. He said he was 250 last year. And what's funny is, I guess it's kind of like boxing or MMA fighting, where a couple of pounds makes such a difference. But... Derek Williams said something yesterday. He's like, all right, yeah, I was 250 last year. I'm down to 235. You know, I got down to 232, and I just felt a little too light, so I worked back up to 235. I'm like, that's 3 pounds. Yep. Like, that doesn't sound like a big difference to me, but I'm not a professional athlete, so I guess that's where the disconnect is. But he looked light. Kevin Love is once again in phenomenal shape. He looked really thin again. Peck is still a gigantic burly man, but he's got like the soldier, maybe a crusade soldier on top of a bed of skulls, and then on his bicep tricep area, and then down on his forearm last year he added like a grizzly bear, because, as he said, you know, everybody afraid of bear. And then on top of that he had an eagle, and it's all like in this forest area, but on the back he's added a wolf head to his elbow. But I was very excited. I didn't get a picture of it, but I was very excited to see that.
That's terrifying, man. It's just... he has a bed of skulls on him?
It's like a soldier from the Crusades, or that's what it looks like, with a sword, like this gigantic sword, standing on a bed of skulls. Like a mound of skulls. Like, I don't want to put words on his arms, but... that kind of looks like a genocide tattoo to me. It's or like a Crusades tattoo or something, but it's terrifying if you really think about it.
Yeah, that is not a pleasant image. That's like,
it's really not.
So is Derek Williams going to play the three?
It sounds like that's what he's trying to do.
But they added more wings.
Right, but Chase went down. And, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, they've got Peck and Turiaf, who, I mean, they're pretty high on Turiaf playing backup minutes at center, assuming Gorgui Dieng doesn't earn those minutes as a rookie. They've got Love, who's going to play, what, 38 minutes a game? And then you've got Dante Cunningham, who Rick Adelman loves and who played, you know, who did everything Adelman asked him to do last year. And where does Williams fit in? I mean, he should be ahead of Dante Cunningham, but he hasn't proven that, so... you know, he's got to find time, and so he said yesterday, he goes, I'm quicker than pretty much every four in the league at this weight. And he said, I'm still, you know, I should be stronger than most three, so that's where my advantage has to be. He's got.
I mean, I like the idea. I've liked the idea of him at the three for a while.
Yeah, he tried it last year, and it did not work. So, yeah. But he was also heavier last year, so.
Yeah, maybe this will help him out. So K-Love looked good.
Caleb looked great. Not in a great mood, I would say. He was playful, really? He was playful at times, but I think I counted up 5 different times in the 16, 14 minutes he spoke yesterday. He mentioned a variation of the past is the past, or last year is last year, and we just want to work on getting better every day moving forward. Like, that dude does not want to talk about the past. He does not want to talk about last year. I understand he was, you know, he struggled with the injury. When he did play, he struggled. And then he had the whole, like, Woj article incident in which fans got pretty pissed off at him for his comments about the organization, which were really just comments about David Kahn. And outside of that, like, he didn't really have a whole lot of positive stuff. So he worked his butt off this summer, and he looks like he's in great shape. And just pro tip, do not ask him about the past at all.
That's weird. And, you know. You've been very good about kind of being like, you know, if he leaves, he leaves.
Yeah.
And there always seem to be so many bad signs with him. Like, it's just like, you keep wanting to ignore it because it's such a cliche story idea. Like, you know, superstar leaves for Lakers, but I don't know. I still keep getting worried that they've done too much damage. Even with Flip coming in, I just worry that they've done too much damage to repair his feelings at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. Like, he's going to opt out in 2015 because that's just the smart business decision, whether he stays or whether he leaves, just to get that extra year of contract into your career. I think there's still a better chance of him staying than leaving because you know, if for some reason, you know, hopefully Adelman's still around. If he's still around, you know, he loves Rick. He really does. Like, he loves Ricky. He loves Peck. He seems to love the guys on this team. And Flip has made every effort, it sounds like, to let Kevin know, look, I'm not David Kahn. We actually value you. We're not going to shop you around. Like, you're our franchise guy. And so, you know, I still think he's in favor of staying if they're a competitive team. It's just, you know, 2015 could roll around and be like, I'd like to go live somewhere else. I'd like to go play somewhere else. I'd like to play with this guy instead. You know, you never know. And he's kind of I think it's a weird thing to read because he's kind of a cantankerous person when it comes to the media. Like, there were certain media members yesterday, I won't say who would ask him a question and he just gave a very short answer. Like, and it seemed very pointed of, you ask me a question, I'm giving you a short answer. And so, I don't know, it was a little bit of a weird vibe, but I also get that he's sick of talking about last year already, and he just wants to become, like, an all-NBA player again. So who knows?
How's Ricky?
Ricky's great. Ricky's just a happy person. Yeah.
Are you worried at all about Eurobasket kind of wearing on?
A little bit, just because, well, I don't know, they didn't use him, like, it's not like he played heavy minutes there, and he didn't really do a lot, if you watched, caught many of the Spain games, they just don't use him the same way he's used in the NBA, so it was a lot of, like, hand the ball to Jose Calderon and go stand over there, which, before it was hand the ball to Juan Carlos Navarro and go stand over there, so, maybe the wear and tear won't be that bad on him, but I do think, like, they'll probably rest him a few days in preseason. He said he was ready to go and that he was 100%. So I don't know. Maybe his young legs will carry him. But there was one cool little moment. Our friend Steve McPherson asked JJ Barea about the FIBA Americas in the last play of the gold medal game, last second shot. Barea actually passed it up and kicked it to somebody. I can't remember the guy's name. But kicked it to a guy for a three-point shot that would have won the game because they were down two. And he asked, like, do you regret passing up that shot? And he was like, no, the guy who took this shot, he's my, you know, I grew up with him. I grew up playing with him. If he had made that shot, like, his name in Puerto Rico would have been cemented forever. Like, that would have, you know, made his career, and that would have, like, in our, you know, in Puerto Rico, like, he just would have been, like, this star of stars. And so I will always, and I told him I would pass it to him every time because he's a really good shooter. I just thought that was, like, kind of a cool thing. Like, we always think of these guys like, oh, you're either afraid to take the last shot or you've got too much bravado and you took a bad shot. But he, like, legitimately wanted his friend to get the glory. I just think that's kind of a cool little moment. But he missed, so it didn't happen.
JJ's not a cleaner, though.
He's not a cleaner. He's a closer most nights. He does work the morning shift sometimes. But yeah. He's a closer most nights.
So
How was Denver's media day?
It was actually really interesting. Tim Connelly was there, Brian Shaw was there. Brian Shaw mentioned either LA or Indiana in nearly every single answer he gave.
Okay.
Some interesting stuff. They're gonna go to more of a traditional positionality.
Okay.
So you're not going to see small ball lineups from Brian Shaw. Essentially, if I were asked to do quote translator, which is something I do a lot for CBS, on the comments, I would say that my big takeaways from the presser of Shaw and Connelly are you're not going to see you're not going to see almost any small ball. You're not going to see only Ty Lawson, Wilson Chandler, and JaVale McGee, I think, have starting spots locked right now, and JaVale has an opportunity to lose it. And Kenneth Faried, I would not be surprised if we hear trade rumors this year.
Really?
Yeah. They're obviously big on him because everyone's big on him because Kenneth Faried's a really good player that plays really hard. But there is some concern for what happens when you take Kenneth Faried out of a fast-paced system where he's not just able to outwork everybody and he's got to be cerebral. That's a comment that Shaw made, was that he needs cerebral defensive players. Now, I don't really understand why the response to that is, and see, you know, now we have J.J. Hixon, but they're awfully big on J.J. Hixon, who also caught me off guard by coming up to me and introducing himself to me, which was odd.
Okay.
I was like, hi, J.J. He's like, hey, I'm J.J. Hixon. I was like, I know, J.J. Like,
he's like, please, somebody write about me. I need press.
Yeah, exactly. Darrell Arthur, who no one's going to care about this, but I just have to share it. I'm very excited because Darrell Arthur is finally healthy. Knock on wood. Knock on all the wood in the world. Had the Achilles last year. Had, I think, an ACL or an Achilles the year before. He's had just a nightmare series of leg injuries every year. And he talked about how he looked bad in the playoffs. And I asked him, I was like, your mid-range shot, which used to be kind of perfect, looked a little bit off in the playoffs last year. And he said, you know, with the Achilles, it messes so much with the rest of your body, I couldn't get in the flow of my shot. And I've worked extremely hard. He's another one of those guys where all the Nuggets essentially look like they've lost like a bazillion pounds.
Yeah.
Like they all just look ridiculously lean. Darrell Arthur, JaVale McGee slimmed down. J.J. Hixon looks slimmer. Like they all look really slim, in good shape. And Wilson looks better than he has been. Wilson's finally healthy. And him going back to the wing, I think, is going to help him a lot. Because I asked him, I was like, is that going to help with the injury? And he's like, I hope so. You know, and he's totally, they asked him, like, are you okay with playing more on the wing? And he's like, I'm fine with that. It's like, no problem. Like, I don't think Wilson ever wanted to play the four or the five. He just had to in certain systems. And but with Faried, I think the problem, there's a number of things, right? So if JaVale turns him into what they need him to be, between him and Lawson, that's a ton of money that they got locked up on those two guys. You can't afford a third big extension for Faried. And figuring out Faried's value has always been a problem.
We've talked about that a lot. It's like, that's my concern with him, is like, he's really good. And he can be really effective. And like, just a guy that can fly around the court like that, grab rebounds, dunk, really energize the crowd and the team, is incredibly invaluable. But at a certain price, or a certain point, you have to put a price tag on that guy. And what is proper for a guy who does have limitations in his game that he can probably iron out, mostly defensively and maybe getting like an offensive move. But it's still, the hype around it may make it a tricky negotiating situation, right?
Yeah. I want to be really clear that they didn't say they were going to trade Faried or look to trade Faried, and I didn't get the information on background from anyone. That's just my own interpretation of what their comments were.
Right.
I'm trying to think what else. They're going to be a metrics organization, but it's going to be very much a balance. They're not 100% all in on metrics, nor are they, we're going to ignore this. They feel like it's necessary to keep up with the Joneses, but they're not going to be at the forefront of doing the metric stuff. They're building their own stuff in-house, but they're not going to be maybe as metric-oriented as maybe even the previous regime was. What else I found? Nate Robinson, big fan of Drake.
Oh, shocker.
JaVale was a jerk, as always. Just total jerk.
Like, I feel like you – I mean, I know this, but like – you do really want to kind of crack that shell, just because he probably would be really fun to cover as he's like progressing into a better player, or hopefully progressing into a better player, right?
I get annoyed because, one, he seems like a really interesting guy, based off of his personality and his Twitter and everything else. He just seems like an interesting – he's a smart individual. He's a very smart individual, and I like talking to smart guys. And – there's two things. One, I don't like that because other reporters or other forms of media have screwed him, I don't like getting held to that. That's like insulting to me, where like there are guys that I've written blast pieces on. Like I have, because I felt like they deserved it. Like if Eric Gordon doesn't want to talk to me, that's fine, because I've been a jerk to Eric Gordon in the media. But like JaVale has no history with me. I've never written anything about him. Just haven't done it. And I don't like being held to that standard. And two, part of me is always kind of like, you're not good enough to big time me like this. Like, you know, like, Kevin Love can do that to me. Ty Lawson could even do that to me. That's kind of the bar. Ty Lawson can do that to me. Not you, not yet. But JaVale just basically just thinks the media is all out to get him and doesn't like him and doesn't want to talk to him, and that's his thing, and that's cool. Like, that's his right. Like, he also doesn't have to be nice to any of us. It's totally fine. Like, it's a professional setting. He gets to act however he wants, and I can complain about it, but his job is to go out and make buckets. So
right.
It's fine. But I asked him, I was like, are you excited that are you excited that the team essentially cleared the decks for you to start center? Like, hey, here's a little softball for you. And he's like, why wouldn't I be?
Huh. Okay. I mean, that's an excellent question. Why wouldn't he be?
Okay. And I was like, does that motivate you at all? No, it doesn't motivate me. I'm going to play like I always do.
Hilariously?
Yeah, I was about to say. You know, there's those little opportunities where you want to be like, oh, okay. but apparently his asthma's better, which is good.
Oh, that is good.
Because they need him to play more minutes, and if he's not running up and down the court crazy like, then he might have more of an opportunity. So that was good. Ty Lawson, the hearing has been rescheduled for his thing with the girlfriend, but he's won't comment on it now, but says he will be more than happy to talk about it at length after it's resolved, which he very much expects it to be thrown out of court. So
okay.
That's the inside track on that. I think what else? Ty Lawson threw a lob over the heads of the media to J.J. Hickson, who dunked it and then landed and started holding his knee.
Seriously? Was he, like, seriously holding his knee?
Not, like, down on the ground.
Yeah.
Not, like, you know.
You didn't have Kevin Harlan, like, looping in your head.
Yeah, I didn't have the Kevin Harlan line. He was just kind of like, And he walked over and was kind of like rowing, and he was fine. I think he was okay, but there was like a moment where I was like, uh-oh. And he looked Ty's like, why would you throw that? And Ty's like, I didn't think you'd try and dunk it. Gallo was not there. Their answer on Gallo was really weird. He's not there. He hasn't been there. He's in Italy. And their response was Gallo will let us know when he's ready.
That's different.
Yeah, so maybe hold off on picking him up in fantasy. Maybe don't stash him away for.
You're not expecting an early return.
Not so much. Shaw was kind of funny talking about how they asked about the 2-guard lineups, and he was like, on the one hand, we've got a lot of strengths with that because we've got really talented point guards. On the other hand, having played point, I know that when I had a smaller guy, I would try and back him down. He's like, now they can pressure you full court, but you know, if we have two point guards out there, one of them's going to get posted. So, yeah.
He was a bigger guard. He played in a lot of 2-guard lineups during his career, but he was a bigger point guard. And now that you say that, I do remember him, like when he was on the Heat, when he was on the Magic, when he was on the Lakers, like just backing little point guards down and kind of setting up the offense that way.
Yeah. So you want to talk a little Elite 100?
I would. Real quick, a couple of quick things. Your story of J.J. Hickson's lob and the knee injury reminded me, on the court, they had, in the media room, that's where they had all the press conferences and talking to players, but then they had the court with all like the photo sessions and stuff to set up, and they have like USA Today sports photo. They have, you know, the local papers taking photos and stuff like that. And so around half court is where they had a lot of the photos. And so they're like set up in these little, they almost look like big voting booths with like the curtain and everything. And so Love, Rubio, and Peck were taking a picture together, I think, for the Pioneer Press or one of the local papers. And it's at midcourt. Kevin Love's got a ball and he just randomly turns, tosses up like a two-handed chest pass from midcourt, knocks down the shot. From inside a booth, like just like it's nothing. Like, it just reminded me of how ridiculously talented these guys are. First try, knocks it down. Just, and we've seen a video of him in college, you know, with a three-quarter court shot and a full court shot. But that's just kind of ridiculous. And then Corey Brewer is going to be a lot of fun for me to cover because I don't know what it is about him, but the way he talks is just hilarious to me. He said someone asked him about being back in Minnesota, and he said, I never dreamed about it, but I'm happy to be back. I like Minnesota. We weren't winning too much when I was here, but I also wasn't too good when I was here. Like, he was just very candid about that. And then someone asked him about his role, and he said, when I was here, I didn't know what I could do and what I couldn't do. We were in a system where we just threw the ball into the post. We ran the triangle. I don't know what that was about. It's a nice little shot at Kurt Rambis. It was fun.
Yeah, you know, and actually, maybe that is one more interesting little thing. Shaw, on the matter of the triangle, in the summer, he was like, not going to run the triangle. It doesn't work with this, you know, these players and yada, yada, yada. And then yesterday, he was like, look, am I going to run the triangle? No. But he's like, you know, tell me what Greg Popovich runs. And a lot of coaches have said this, that essentially Popovich is running a lot of triangle sets, that
yeah,
it's a heavy part of what they do. And that Doc Rivers has elements of it in his offense too. And I mean, the central component is it's built around ball movement. Like, that's the core idea, is that it's built around ball movement. Now, I have some different things about it because I'm like, you want to emphasize different things, and two, where you position guys. Like, I don't want Kenneth Faried at the elbow, JaVale McGee down low, and Randy Foley on the wing. That's not a good idea. Like, don't do that. And Shaw also said, he's like, one of the reasons that we were in the triangle is because we didn't have a really dynamic point guard. He's like, we have Ty Lawson. So, you know, that's going to be a big thing. Whether he can get through to Ty Lawson is going to be the big question. Like, that continues to be a huge issue, essentially. And Shaw kind of took some shots, basically saying, like, Ty Lawson may not have simply the attitude to be, like, an upfront aggressive leader. He just may not be built that way. You know, and that's something that Carl was constantly on him about being aggressive. And Ty talks about it because Ty knows that's what he needs to do. But saying it and doing it are two different things.
Yeah. Just to flip back to my experience with the Wolves yesterday, a lot of players are talking about how Kevin Love needs to be a leader.
Yep.
And not that he isn't a leader, but just like he needs to lead all the time. And it is interesting. Like, Lawson is probably the best player on that team, right? And yep. Kevin Love is definitely the best player on his team. And sometimes you need the best player to lead.
And it's like an interesting thing because you can, you know, everyone says, well, you lead by example. Like, you need somebody to be a vocal leader.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the issues is, like, the vocal leader is, honestly, it's Andre Miller. That's the guy that's the smartest. He's the guy that has the most experience. He's the guy, but I'm also, it's like, I'm trying to think of, like, the comparison. It's like Woody Harrelson in The Hunger Games.
I haven't seen The Hunger Games, but keep going.
It's so he's this guy that survived the Hunger Games before, and he has to teach the people from their district how to fight. And he's always drunk and just always depressed about it, and like hates his life and hates everything about this world that he lives in. And so basically, like, in the beginning of it, his character is very much like, well, you're gonna die. Sucks for you. Like, that's it. Like, that's kind of how Andre Miller is. It's like, oh no, you should keep your sword. Oh, it's not gonna matter. You're gonna die. No.
And you know, last year he was almost like trying to stop expectations. He's like, nah, we're not a title team. Nah, we're not that good.
And here's the thing though, is I asked Carl and I asked his teammates about it, and everyone says the same thing, which is what he tells you guys is not how he is in practice.
Yeah.
Like, whoever Andre Miller is, we don't get him. And that's fine. Like, again, I don't have any sort of problem with that. It makes it hard for me because I have to react to who he is to me. Like, and who he is with the media is very much like, the Nuggets like gave me a long-term extension even though I was well past my expiration date. Nah, they kind of suck. Just a little bit. Like, we're definitely not winning with this, you know. So I wanted to talk to him yesterday, but he was actually underneath a – like, he chose to do his media availability sitting on the goal on the practice court underneath it. Like, hidden away. He talked to – I saw two people and then was gone. Just whoop.
Good for him.
Yep. So Andre Miller has no use for any of us. But yeah, I think it'll be an interesting year. I don't know how good they're going to be. And Tim Connelly and Brian Shaw were both very much – they were very much like, well, we're not trying to compete. Like, we'd love to win 57 games again. We just don't know.
Yeah.
and they weren't like, well, there may be some growing pains, or, well, this, you know, we may take a step back this year. They were like, we don't know. We could be great. We gotta see. Don't know. Last thing that was kind of interesting is they asked if they were surprised the market value they got on Nate Robinson. They said yes.
I can actually see that.
Well, it's not that I disagree. I totally agree, because you know me. I always think everyone's gonna get overpaid.
Yeah.
It was more that they openly in a press conference essentially said, like, if you're Nate Robinson, you're reading that, it's like your boss saying, oh man, we're not paying that guy nearly enough. Not nearly enough.
It's kind of like the Bob Myers, Carl Landry thing or at least like it got revealed as Landry was opting out and going to be a free agent this year. He was like, yeah, we were surprised we got him for that price.
Yep. So, Elite 100.
Elite 100. Our rankings, our top 100 players in the league are out. Well, they're not fully out. We've got 100 through 51 were posted yesterday. 50 through 26 will be posted today. Some surprises on there, I would say.
A lot of good players that land up in the back 50. It kind of shows you how good this league is.
There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... six guys that I did not rank that ended up in the top 100.
And that's down. I think the first time we did it, we all had eight.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at what's more. I mean, I've got a lot more.
I think the most surprising one, and this is one you and I both did not rank, but Royce Young ranked very high, was DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
I was shocked that he made it, and then I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe Matt just overvalued him and Royce overvalued him. And I was like, oh, Matt actually doesn't value him at all. This is all Royce.
You know, the podcast made me smarter. Honestly, I got to credit that one to you, because whenever I looked at DeRozan, I kept coming back to, it's a shooting guard that can't hit threes.
Yeah, it's a shooting guard who can't shoot. And it doesn't mean he's a bad player. It's just when you're looking at I think he could be one of the 100 greatest players in the league. I mean, his athletic ability, I think he can be a really good defender, but his inability to hit threes, at least up until this point, maybe he'll add that for next season, it cuts down on so much you can do with him.
Brandon Jennings, we talked about yesterday.
Yes.
Here's an interesting one. Manu Ginobili. Royce has got him and we'll say some of these rankings, and some of them we won't reveal. Royce has got him in the bottom 20. You have him what I consider to be really high. And I will say it right now, I left Manu Ginobili off my Elite 100, which it hurt me to do.
Yeah. I had him in the just outside the top 65 players. And I think kind of like what we talked about with Jennings, like, I'm extending a line of credit here to Manu a little bit. Like, he fell immensely from last year's rankings into where he is now, which I think is a fair choice. I don't think he'll be nearly as bad as he was last year. I also don't think he'll be the Manu we know and we love. And I think he's got, like, one more kind of awkward year. He'll have some ups, he'll have some downs. And then after next year, if he's still playing, I probably won't rank him.
I kept coming back to, he thought about retirement.
Yeah.
Going into the finals.
Yeah.
Like, he said to himself, I think I may be done. It's hard for me to get, and it wasn't like, I think I've accomplished everything. It was, this is very hard. And when I looked and saw that you guys both ranked him, I was like, all right, let me go back and take another look at him. And then I was like, you know, his per 36s are good. As are gonna be, but part of that's because he really, you know, he's down to 23 minutes a game. It's 12 points in 23 minutes. The assist ratio is again good for his per 36s, but part of it also with me is when Manu goes bad, it goes so bad, and the finals bore that out. Like, I don't, you know, I've got a lot of grief for twisting the knife on Spurs fans, but. For anyone that wants to disagree, like, that was also a part of it. Was I'm not basing off of one playoff series, and he had good moments in the Memphis series and in the Golden State series, but in general, there were a lot of times when he would come in and there just things would go very badly, and his turnover issues, that's a sign that he's kind of lost it. Now, I've dabbled Ginobili before and he's come back and bitten me in the ass, so he could very well jump back in next year. It wouldn't shock me. I just couldn't look at the list of guys that I wanted to give credit to and assign money to that. I was like, I just don't think he's able to play a big enough role in this team. He's still efficient and good when he's on the court, but he also can't stay on the court for very long where he does lose that efficiency.
Yeah, so. I think where I looked at it is I kept putting him against other guys on the list, and like I have him higher than Danny Granger, and I looked at Danny Granger, I was like, who would I rather have next year? Would I rather have Danny Granger or Manu Ginobili? Like, I'll take the risk on Ginobili not being good at all over Granger being, you know, half of what he was last time we saw him. And so that I think that's where he kind of climbed the list for me is putting him in that, all right, I know he's really declining, but I still think he can be an effective player within the role. And even though he's kind of crap in the bed at this point, you can see the opposing team is still fearful of him. And so that kind of impacted where I ranked him.
Yeah, so in case you're listening, you're not going to get any hot sports takes, you know, first sports opinion of the morning show kind of things here. Like, pretty much, I can see that.
I'm saying you can win a championship with Manu Ginobili as your best player right now. That's what I'm saying.
I'm going to take the role of I'm going to do this for Royce Young right now. You did not rank Nick Collison. How dare you?
He just missed the cut for me.
How dare you?
I went back and I almost added him. I wish he was ranked higher than Eric Bledsoe. I'll say that.
Yeah, man, you are.
Eric Bledsoe is going to be good. There is a reason he couldn't crack like the rotation last year. I don't believe it was just Vinny Del Negro. Like, he has serious limitations.
I think a lot of it, and this goes into what we talked about yesterday, is when we do these rankings, everybody's going to put different emphasis on it. And I think from what we know of the two of us, I'm going to put more stock in the upside and potential. Like, I'm going to say, you know, this guy's got such a good chance of being good that I'm going to increase him based off of what he showed last year and what I expect from a natural growth pattern.
Right. And me, I'm always like, I know this guy's going to be good, but I got to see it first. And not that he wasn't good in his role last year, but his role was also pretty limited.
Hey, I got a question. So for Gerald Wallace, was this like a 2009 ranking? Did I not like send good enough instructions? Because between Ginobili and Gerald, I'm kind of like.
Let me just tell you something. Gerald Wallace.
Gerald Wallace is only on this list because of you.
Yes, he is. I mean, I could say the same thing about Jeff Green with you.
We're going to talk about Jeff Green. We go and talk about Jeff Green.
Gerald Wallace being on this list is a lot less egregious than DeMar DeRozan being on this list.
So I'll agree with that.
I'll defend myself that way. Two, I would rather have Gerald Wallace than Danny Granger. I would rather have Gerald Wallace than, let's say, I'll even say Amir Johnson.
Fans, get off me and get on Zach. Like, I ranked Amir the highest of anybody.
I'll say this too, Raptors fans. Let's just get it all out on the table. I don't think Drake's very good.
You don't deserve an All-Star game.
No, I'm fine with the All-Star game. I'd love to go to Toronto. I've always wanted to go to Toronto, so send me there. I'm happy with that. But Gerald Wallace is still a very good defender. I mean, there's a reason why you and I talked about when that trade happened before they signed Kirilenko. It was like, uh-oh. Now they don't have a wing defender. And how important are wing defenders in today's game? I still think Gerald Wallace is a very good wing defender. And so that's enough for me. Like, I don't care what he did. I never cared what he did on offense.
He was good in the first half of the year, but then it got bad.
Yeah, it got very bad. I don't think it was something that came out of Celtics Media Day. He found out yesterday that they have a preseason game on Monday.
Oh.
That's when he found out their first preseason game. So I wouldn't say he's totally locked in. I also expect him to get I expect him to get moved.
40% from the field last year, 28% from three, 64% from the line, 5 rebounds per game, 3 assists, 1.4 steals, a block. He was bad. He was awful bad.
Sure.
He was, he was really bad, and I could not – and again, that one hurt me because I love Darrell Wallace, but I couldn't justify it. Okay. I don't understand, like – tell me what you think Jeff Green's per 36s are.
I would guess like 19 and 7.
Okay, you overestimated.
Oh, okay.
17-5-2. All
right.
On 47% from the field, 39% from three, which is – that's actually really high.
Yeah.
And 81% from the line. And let me look at his splits. Post-All-Star game, this is something that really caught me. Post-All-Star game, his per game numbers were 17-5-3 on 49% from the field, 44% from three, and 80% from the line.
Yes, he's capable of good stretches.
Jeff Green was good last year. He was at times the Celtics, honestly, honest to God, he was the Celtics' best overall player last year at times.
After Rondo went down, sure.
Yeah. Not Elite 100?
No. Here's the thing. Technically, if you're in the top 220...
Arjen Gortat, but not Jeff Green.
Yeah, you can do a lot more with Gortat than you can with Green. And I'm not even that high on Gortat. But the thing is, like, technically, if all the rosters are full, being in the top 225 makes you one of the better players in the league. Like, if Jeff Green's the 120th best player on my list, is that actually a bad thing? Like, is that disrespectful? That's still a really good player. And that's probably where he is for me. Like, he's in that 115 to 120 range. But I don't think he's one... I wouldn't put him... I mean, obviously, I wouldn't put him over the top 100 guys on my list.
What's he got to do to get there?
I don't know. Maybe do what he did in the second half of last season for all of next season.
Okay.
Or the majority of next season. Like, he'll obviously have peaks and valleys, but... But I mean, I liked him last year. I'm happy he's back. It's a great story, and he did play very well down the stretch. But I need a little bit more than that.
So I don't really know what to do with a world in which you ranked Amari Stoudemire in the top 60, nearly in the top 50, and I didn't rank him at all. I don't understand.
This is confusing, isn't it?
What happened?
And I mean, this will come out. We'll talk about this tomorrow, but. Or we'll talk about this the next time we talk about the rankings. But you also had KG a lot higher than I did, right? Maybe we just switched those rankings.
Like, did we go through some sort of, like, why do I have this sudden urge to watch Battlefield Earth? What's happening?
First of all, you always had that urge. Don't pretend. And second, the Amari thing, I was just kind of like, this guy should be really good.
I was like... He can barely get on the court, and when he does, it's a defensive disaster, and he's never going to be in a position to succeed there because they don't know what a pick and roll is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's more of a, if he was on a different team, how good would we think he is?
That's fair.
That kind of factored into my decision there. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't excited about that ranking I gave him, but I just kind of thought, like, all right, I know the health injury. The health issues, I know the bad fit, but like if this guy was on Boston, how would we feel about him?
Like, I was surprised that you and I were. Our variance on J.R. Smith is a little high, and for the three of us, but you and I were within nine points on him. So
that's not bad.
Yeah, I had the lowest of him, so at least there's some sense in this world.
Sure,
I had him the lowest. So we talked about this a little bit yesterday. How on earth are you the one with the lowest score for Jamal?
Jamal is an incredibly fun player, and he can be incredibly useful on offense.
You had OJ Mayo above Jamal.
Yeah, OJ's a better defender. We always talk about, like, overall, or not always, but we've often talked about, like, overall impact versus an all-around player. And we talked about that with Paul George and Carmelo, right? Or maybe I talked about it with Ethan. I know you and I have talked about that at some point in our podcasting career. Of what is the difference between overall impact and then a guy who's just an all-around better player? And that's kind of where I am with OJ and Jamal Crawford. Me personally, I'd rather have Jamal just because I think Jamal's fun. And I don't get any joy out of watching OJ Mayo's game at all. But OJ is a better outside shooter. And he's a better defender. And I think you can probably do more with that than you can with Jamal, even though Jamal's more fun.
Okay, the last one before we go. If you guys have suggestions, read the top our Elite 100, either of the sections, yesterday's or today's. Send us comments in the comments or on Twitter, and we will, if we consider it worthy, we will discuss it.
Yeah, and tag it with EOB Pod.
EOB Pod. I have Ricky Rubio as the 60th best player in the league.
Yes.
And Royce has him as, I think, somewhere in the 70s. You have a 90?
Yeah.
I was stunned.
I wrote about this on the
Wolf. I applaud your your sense of objectivity, but
I believe in his passing. I believe in his defense. But I wrote about this on the Wolf Among Wolves. Like, there are legitimate concerns about whether or not he can lead an elite offense because of the lack of scoring efficiency. And now I'm not saying he's got to be a 45, 35, 90 guy in terms of percentages, but is he going to be able to get to around 40% from the field? Is he going to be able to finish on drives? Like, there are improvements, and it's kind of hard to judge off two injury plagued years. And this team was a playoff team before he went down with the knee injury in his rookie season. And it was a much worse team then. But they're still like, his defense is only going to carry them so far. And I actually think, like, in the next 2-3 years, I think he's going to get an all defensive team nod. Because his defense really is that good. And he's learning how to, when to gamble and just the deflections he gets. But the offense, I mean, they haven't, and it's not even a thing like, they've been a great offense with him on the court, and then the bench is like screwing it up when he comes off the court. Like, they just haven't been an incredible offense or even an average offense when he's on the court in his 2 years. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into that that make it a little unfair, but there's still something where I love him. I think he's going to be great, but he's still got to show the impact on offense rather than us just thinking, hey, that passing's going to get there sometime. You know?
Two last things before we go. You and I both had the same scores for Chandler Parsons and Klay Thompson. Thought that was interesting.
I have to admit, there was a brief moment of panic when I saw Chandler Parsons on the list where I thought, oh crap, did I forget to rank him? And then I went back and looked, and like, no, I actually had him like kind of in the middle of our ranking. So I did have a brief moment of panic that I forgot to include him.
And then Andrew Bynum, way high, way high.
Yeah, that's a lot of, hey, if he plays, he's pretty good. I had him as a top 30 player, and that's strictly off of, hey, if he can get on the court, he's pretty good.
I forgive players being outright bad when they're young, and you forgive guys having massive injury issues.
That's where the disconnect is with him. Oh, by the way, screw you and Royce for I feel like you guys set it up to where I had to write the Rudy Gay capsule for today.
You also ranked him the highest.
I did, because I still think he's a pretty good player. But he ended up getting 50th, and I wrote 50 through 26. So I'm sure that I'm going to get the flack for having him on the list there. But I'm going to reveal the rankings when that happens. So Raptors fans, we're back.
Last night on Campfire, my response was, shave and a haircut, 2 bits, and I left. All right. I think I'll do it, man. My kid's up and yelling, so I got to go.
Yeah, 100 through 51 are up. 50 through 26 will be up today, and we'll have more tomorrow. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Zach.